I'll turn it over to you. Randy Pitzer, everybody.
Thank you, folks. Thanks for the great turnout. It's terrific. Just wanted to give you a little idea of what we're going to do today. We're going to have Mark Schadel, guest speaker, talk to us a little bit about trust. And then after that, we're going to ask our panelists, our distinguished panelists, to give us some commentary on that and then answer any questions from you folks. So let me start by introducing folks here. I want to start with introducing our panelists. I'm going to go from my left to the right. So start with Rita here. Rita Affis has built an outstanding career in the public and private partnership area. She is the president of World Business Chicago, a business advocacy group for the city of Chicago. Crane Chicago Business named Rita as one of the 100 most influential women in Illinois. She is a member of the Chicago 2016 Olympic Committee and serves on the International Advisory Committee. She's also a grandmother of seven, which is the most important. Ellis Booker, who's in the middle here, is, if you've been dealing with the media over the years, you probably know Ellis. Ellis has had a distinguished career in publishing. He is editor-in-chief of B2B Magazine and editor of B2B Media Business. He also manages B2B's Net Marketing Breakfast Series. And prior to B2B Magazine, Ellis worked at Internet Week, Web Week, and Computer World. And I think a couple of those are still in business, right? That's a joke. So the third guest here is Clark Kaywood. Clark is with Northwestern University. He is one of academia's leaders in integrated marketing communication. He is director of the graduate program in public relations and past chair of the Department of Integrated Marketing Communications in the McGill Graduate School at Northwestern. Clark has been widely published and consults frequently for on the for-profit side, including Emerson Electric, IBM, and Dairy Management, Inc. And now our guest speaker, Mark Schadel, who I've known for a number of years, actually worked for. But Mark has been in the business for over 25 years in corporate communications and integrated marketing communications. He is the president of Edelman Central Region, which includes Chicago, Dallas, and Austin, with some over 400 employees, I believe, we have now. He's worked on a number of programs for a wide range of companies, many B2B companies, including Alcoa, Boeing, EDS, Motorola, NCR, and Rockwell Collins. His programs have received a number of awards, including awards from BMA, Publicity Club of Chicago, and PRSA. In 2003, Mark was named B2B Magazine's Who's Who in B2B. Do you remember that, Ellis? He is active in the Chicago business scene as a member of the Economic Club, the Executives Club, and the Chicago Council of Global Affairs. Also, Mark has been a blogger for over 5 years. His blog is a Reputation Notebook. If you want to get to it, you just go to the Edelman website, and there's a link to it. So without further ado, I'm going to turn the presentation over to Mark and have him talk about trust. Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks for the applause. Just judging from the headlines, I'm going to talk about trust today, so we'll see if everyone continues to applaud after all the data is here. Let me just move the mouse here and I hope this is gonna work for me. I'll do this left-handed. So what I wanted to do today is really just share with you the results from a study that our firm, Edelman, has done now really for the past 10 years. So we've done this annually, more about the same time each year, examining the state of trust around the world. We initially started this only by looking at about four or five markets, and it gradually became, very quickly became a global study. And a couple things that I want to talk about what we'll do today. First of all, I just want to give you a snapshot of what trust is like globally. I want to dive a little deeper down and talk about trust in the U.S. Take a look at government and business and how they fare and what that relationship is like, because obviously there's a lot of issues going on around the world as well as in the U.S. We have a new administration here in the United States, and we actually looked at this data because we wanted to see what the impact of that would be. We'll talk very quickly about who to trust and who all of you look to as trusted sources, and maybe what you can advise your executives in your firm and maybe your clients if you're a marketer on the things that they should do to improve their trust. We'll spend a little bit of time on the business case, and then finally, just to kind of pull it all together, some suggestions, certainly from an Edelman perspective, of things that your companies or your clients might be able to do to improve trust or to rebuild trust. So I'm going to go through some... Does that help? I'm going to go through some data. I'll try to point out some of the highlights. Hopefully, with the sight lines in the room, everyone can see them. If there's anything you need me to call out, just let me know about that. So as I mentioned, you know, the study that we've done, we've looked at, this year we looked at about 20 different markets around the world. The demographics for that, we typically look at opinion, what we've called opinion elites, opinion leaders. And what we mean by that are people who make above a certain income bracket. It was about 75,000, I think, was the cutoff for part of the demographic. And most importantly, they were considered to be media attentive, right? They were consumers of the media. They were people who could comment on topics of the day. Last year, what we did is we actually added a new demographic because social media and the online world was becoming so important that what we did is we added a younger demographic. So you see that traditionally we had looked at 35 to 64 as being a pretty broad demographic sweep. We added 25 to 34 into the mix, and you'll see some of the data reflect that. Now, over the 10 years that we've done the trust barometer, I was saying that, you know, each year we do it and we say, what if this is the year that there's no news? What if this is the year that everything is the same as it was last year and we have nothing to talk about? So fortunately, there's been something to talk about just about every year that we've done this. And you really, when you think back to 2001, 2002, you think about Enron, you think about September 11th, the things that were going on in the world then, and you think about the age of the imperial CEO kind of coming to an end. Sort of in the middle there, what you see is some real interesting shifts. And what was pointed out in that particular point in time is this trust shifting from authorities to peers. And that's just something I want to call out because that's one of the areas that really hasn't changed. If anything, it seems to have intensified. People looking to their peers, looking to authorities for an objective point of view. You see in 2006, another way of phrasing that is this, what we come up with is this concept of a person like me. And we talked earlier this morning about a person like me and who is that person. A person like me isn't necessarily someone of the same demographic a description as you, but it's someone who shares a common interest. It's someone who maybe works in the cube next to you. Or in the case of business marketers, it could be your customers talking to their fellow customers. So it's people in training talking to someone else at a training conference, IT people talking to other IT people. So just keep that in mind when we talk about peers. And then what we saw in 2007, this is interesting, is that business was more trusted than government and the media. And we'll get to that in a second. So what a difference a year and a half makes. If you remember the headline Fortune, I should say, over on the far side, business was back. And last year we were talking about how business was actually seen as being the institution that came to the rescue. So when Hurricane Katrina hit, you might recall that the cover being how, you know, where was FEMA, as I think was what the headline was. And it was Walmart, Home Depot, and FedEx coming to the rescue. So business was really seen as solving a lot of society's problems and being expected to do so. Well, you see on the other side now, there goes Wall Street being carted off to jail by the government. So we clearly have something that we need to talk about today. So the state of trust globally, an interesting quote here because I think this captures it all, which is that we're in the middle of a full-blown crisis. And clearly the comments here are based on the financial market. What I didn't mention up front, but I should point out, is when this particular study was fielded. We fielded this one a little bit later than we normally do. We fielded it after the U.S. elections. So normally we do it in the September-October timeframe. We wanted to make sure we got clear of the elections so there wasn't really a political aspect to it one way or the other, but we could take a look in trust in government, trust in business, and so forth. So let's take a look at the global perspective. So first point that you might want to start in your notebook is that trust is not it's a global concept, but trust is also country specific. So depending on where you sit in the world, you may have a different point of view on what you feel about businesses, NGOs, the media, and so forth. Most notably over on the at your left-hand side, I'll get that right, what you see is the precipitous drop in the United States in terms of trust. And what do we mean when we talk about trust? The question is essentially, what do you trust these organizations or these institutions to do what's right? Obviously, that's a very subjective point of view, but everybody seems to agree you're doing what's right or you're not. In this case, what we saw is the U.S. drop off from 58% down to 38%. But on the other side of the chart, what you see is there are actually some places where trust in business has actually increased. And one idea that we have when you take a look and you see these countries, you see China being up there. And what we believe to be true is part of this is the halo effect of the Olympics. So you see a lot of companies coming into China, investing in China, doing corporate social responsibility campaigns that reflect on issues in China, and you see sort of the halo effect of that. Again, that's our point of view on that. And then, of course, you see some areas where trust has managed to hold steady, too. So what we've seen in the United States is we've seen that we've enjoyed sort of a trust surplus over the years here. And if you go back to the early days of the trust barometer, and I mentioned, you know, Enron in 2001, you see what's happened there. You see that we've enjoyed a surplus for a while, but now, you know, essentially, according to this chart, U.S. has become the new Europe. We're essentially on par. So people in Europe viewing business, people in the United States viewing business, they pretty much view business in the same way. And unfortunately, that's a really low level. That's business dropping in the United States down to 38%. So 38% of people surveyed said they trust business to do what's right. Notably, we asked a different question in addition to this one, and we found that 77% of people in the United States say they trust business less than they did last year. So again, a pretty big drop. We took a look at business versus government, and what you see here is even though business is down, business is still ahead in 13 out of the 20 countries that we surveyed. So again, business has a little bit of a lead, but not much of one. And again, it depends on where you happen to sit in the world that has a factor in this. So what's the takeaway from this? If you're a business-to-business marketer and you have a global corporation, you do business overseas, you need to think in mind that your communications may need to be different depending on which particular part of the world you're doing business in and who you're talking to. You may have a greater hurdle that you need to overcome. One of the constants throughout the study that we've done over the years is the role of NGOs, non-government organizations, and they are seen essentially as being, you know, the most trusted or one of the most trusted institutions across the study and certainly this particular year. What you do see, however, is that when you take a look at the different institutions here, NGOs, business, the media, and government, there's the global total on one side, there's the U.S. total on the other, and as you see, the U.S. has less trust today in all institutions across the board. But again, NGOs have a slight lead there. Now I know that, you know, when we talk about business to business subjects, vertical markets are really important. These are some of the ones that we asked about. Obviously they're not business to business specific or very industry, you know, sort of granular. We didn't specifically look at chemical companies, steel companies, and so forth. But I think what you can do is draw some conclusions from this. What you see is, once again, and this has been a constant, I believe almost every year, is that technology firms, they enjoy a bit of an edge. Technology firms are ahead in terms of being trusted institution, as is biotech and life sciences. There's always been in the trust barometer this idea that if you are somehow attached to technology, you are seen as providing some value or some good to the larger society, and as a result, there's a bit of a halo. No surprise, what did you see? You see insurance, banks near the bottom. You'll also see, this is global data with the bar charts, but then the numbers are actually the US, and the US numbers are even lower than the global totals almost all the way across the board. And we did break out the healthcare industry, you know, in general versus pharmaceutical companies specifically. So for any of you who are in that market, it's interesting that, you know, healthcare providers and so forth actually are seen as being a bit more trusted than pharmaceutical companies in specific. So I just want to dive down now and just take a closer look at the U.S. Here's a guy that a year ago, 2 years ago, we might not have even known who he was, but look at the quote. Especially the last sentence, there is no way of knowing if someone is a con artist. The presumption of trust is gone. And I think a lot of us enter our business relationships hoping that at least we start at a neutral place and then build from there. In this case, it's actually, the pendulum has swung in the other direction. I just don't know about you. You need to put down your cards and your credentials before I even know if I should do business with you. And, you know, thanks to people like this, this is what we have to deal with today. So I mentioned how the study looked at various institutions and that every one of them was down. Here what you can see in the U.S. is exactly how far each of these institutions has fallen in terms of trust. And again, one point that I do want to make is a low trust score doesn't necessarily indicate distrusted. What you should take away from that is that it actually has a higher hurdle or a higher bar that it needs to get over when it enters into a relationship and tries to be credible. Okay, so it doesn't mean I distrust you. It means that you need to do a lot more to establish my trust. And what are the reasons why? If you read the headlines, none of these are surprising. People are dealing with the economy. What do they see? They see executive inequality. My boss is making far more money than I am, despite the fact that the company is losing money. I mean, a lot of things like that. But what you do notice out of here, my takeaway was, look at negative and media news being only 3%. So, you know, the issue is negative news about the company what's really driving a lack of trust, or is it behaviors? And we'd argue based on the data that behaviors are really driving this. So for those of us who are communicators and advising clients, you have to really sit down and have a hard conversation with clients that it's not only about what you say. You can't go out and have positive messages but continue doing bad things. It's not going to work. So again, here's another look from the U.S. perspective at various industries. And again, you know, keep in mind that the data was fielded back in November. So you have banks in the automotive industry really taking a dive here year over year, and that was that long ago. You know, we only wonder what would the data look like if we fielded it now. Would it be even worse? Probably so. And once again, what you see is technology, of course, over here on this side, you know, still really enjoying a small decline, but only seeing a small decline year over year, and it's really still ahead of the pack. One of my favorite charts here, this takes a look at the 10 years that we've done the trust barometer, and it looks at the S&P 500. And it's interesting the way the trust and the index have sort of, you know, followed each other. But the question is it performance in the marketplace that causes people to trust in the market more and trust in companies in the market? Or is it the other way around? And of course, we don't actually know, but the indications that we've seen from what's being said in the market is that if this thing is going to turn around, it's going to be that people will establish trust and find trust in organizations before they're willing to actually put down some money, before they're willing to act positively toward these companies. So trust has really got to come back before we'll see it move forward. We looked at government, as I mentioned, and this is interesting. We looked at four specific, what we termed as global problems, and you'll see there it's, I think some of those are merged together, but energy costs, the financial credit crisis, global warming, and affordable health care. And what you see from these, what's really interesting is the question is, who's responsible for causing the problem, first of all? Is it business? Is it government? And what you see is that although there's a gap that you saw in the trust barometer data earlier about trust, government and business, for the most part, are seen as sharing equally in being responsible for causing the problem. When you take a look a little bit further into the data, the question is who's held responsible for solving the problem? So both of them are responsible for causing it, but the data essentially shows that people believe that by and large, government is more responsible for fixing the problem. What's notable about the data from a US perspective though, when you take a look at it, is that in some of these categories, it's energy, financial, and access to affordable healthcare. The expectation of U.S. businesses is ahead of the rest of the world. Okay, so the same is true. Government is more responsible than business, but in the U.S., we expect business to step up maybe more than it does elsewhere in the world. So what does this mean from a business marketer's perspective or a corporate communications perspective? We're seen as being responsible for the problem, but people expect government to do more. Does that mean that we basically just get to abdicate responsibility? What we see is absolutely the opposite, is that people are now expecting that government is going to partner with NGOs, they're going to partner with third parties and with government to solve these big global problems. So we're not off the hook yet as business. We still really need to get involved in this. And what you see here is, for those of you, if just so you can read it, the blue is partnering with governments and third parties, the green being do what it can alone, and of course, you know, playing no role being on the other side. So people out in the world aren't expecting you to solve these problems on your own. They expect you today to find a way to partner. Another interesting stat out of the trust barometer was people's point of view toward government intervention and increased regulation. And what you see here is by a 3-to-1 margin globally and in the United States, informed publics believe that the government should impose stricter regulations and greater control over business across all industries. So what a takeaway from this is, essentially, your license to operate is under increased scrutiny, not only by the government, but by people who are making statements like this. So the population is starting to think, hey, you know what? It's starting to make sense that somebody needs to step in and take control of this. So what's the answer to avoiding increased government regulation? I'd argue self-regulation, showing that you're in charge, showing that you're acting responsibility may kind of keep those dogs at bay. So an interesting part of the barometer every year is who can we trust? And certainly this guy who many of you saw in yesterday's Wall Street Journal, I thought it was interesting that the journal asserted that Satyam in Sanskrit was truth or trust, which I thought was kind of ironic. So we take a look every year and we look at sources and we look at spokespeople and what does that mean for us as communicators? So here the conversation really just asks the question, who do you look to as a credible source of information? And the three areas that we've broken down here that you can see, we've looked at traditional, we've looked at corporate, things like websites, and then we've looked at sort of the digital arena. So they're not necessarily ranked in order as much as they're clustered. But what you do see is that stock and industry analysts at the top, articles in business magazines are being ranked as being highly credible sources according to this. Conversations with their peers. So it's the employee again in the next cube. It's the person at the trade association. People that are seen as people like me, again, are highly credible. And of course, search engines and so forth are viewed as being somehow still to be somewhat unbiased, which is kind of interesting given all the conversations that we've had. Articles in business magazines. You know, one thing that we've talked to people about is why would that be higher than newspapers, for example. I think business magazines are perceived as having the opportunity and the space and the time to dig into stories a bit more deeper than the average daily. So that seems to be showing up in the data that we see here. So all of you are trying to figure out from a corporate perspective, what are the things that works? What are the things that work? What are the things that we should do to communicate? And what you see is corporate communications, right? The press, the press release, emails directly from the corporation down, your own website down, corporate and product advertising down, right? Anything that comes directly from the company that doesn't have some sort of third party credibility, some sort of third party endorsement, automatically takes a hit. So who do you have go out and speak on behalf of your company, directly or indirectly? And what you see here is that an academic or an expert in your firm's industry is seen as being the most credible source, followed by a financial or industry analyst and a person like yourself. The issue there, of course, is objectivity. If there's the perception of objectivity, people tend to believe those messages more than they do, than they see in things that are closer to the company. Scary, of course, is where CEOs sit. Every year, they continue to get lower and lower and lower. And so what you see in 2009 is 19%. So they're one of the least trusted sources. And the reason for that is they're given the company line. Of course they're gonna say great things about the company. They're not an objective source, so they're the least credible. Not that they're distrusted, but boy, they sure have a higher hurdle that they need to get across when they go out into the marketplace. And again, you know, notice the importance of a person like yourself or a regular employee of the company. You need to communicate through your employees, even if it's a consumer sell where you skip, you know, over the retailer, or if it's a business-to-business sale where you're dealing with a lot of intermediaries, you need to get employees on the board. Now, we talked in the business-to-business world about advertising and impressions, and traditionally how many impressions does it take before people acknowledge your brand or begin to remember it, and, you know, 5, 6, 7 times you need to get those impressions across. This is a different question. This question is essentially, you see at the bottom, think about everything you see or hear daily about companies, positive or negative. How many times in general do you need to hear about something about a specific company to believe that the information is likely to be true? And what people have said takes about 3 to 5 times, 60% of them, right? So the argument there is, it's not saying the same thing 3 to 5 times, it's saying it through multiple channels. It's having different voices participate in that conversation. So what we've seen in the trust barometer year over year is that trust does in fact matter. It does make a difference. People make business decisions on it. It's not just sort of a state of being. When you take a look at what's important to a company's reputation, what you see at the top, great products and services, right? Quality still matters. Quality in products, quality in the delivery. but you also see that senior leadership has to be trusted. That's getting closer and closer to the top. Value for money. A lot of these things have to do with behaviors, once again. But what we have seen, and we've taken a look at this every year, is the inclination of people to act on trust or distrust. And you remember, I remember back in B school in my marketing classes and sitting there and someone saying, if someone has a good experience with a company, they may tell three people, but if they have a bad experience, they tell 11. Well, unfortunately, that was pre-internet. Now it's a few clicks away and you're telling millions and millions of people around the world, right? So, but what we do see here is, and again, the US data is even greater than the global data, but if people trust your firm, what will they do? They'll buy your products and services, they'll recommend you to a colleague, they'll pay a premium, they'll share a positive experience. But they're equally inclined, except for the purchase area, they're equally inclined to do something negative. They're going to get online, they're going to say something about it, they're going to tell people about it. So don't look at trust as only being a one-way proposition. If people don't trust you, or if you have a trust deficit, they're going to do something about it. So a couple of learnings that we've had from this, and maybe you've taken some of this away from the conversation so far. So first of all, this idea of a license to operate being under threat. Right? So I would say virtually every business that you're in, if you're in food or if you're in a commodity or if you're in a services business, you're in industrial, that license to operate because people think that the government should step in and clamp down and put some additional controls on board. But once again, you don't have to give up just because there's regulation, because people are also saying, we want to see you partner with government. We want to hear about your NGO relationships. We want you to talk about it, not just do it. We're moving from a shareholder to a stakeholder society, right? It's not just about serving your investors and your shareholders, but it's a full community of people who are around the firm. And once again, you probably heard this time and time again so far this morning, partnership really is part of the solution. So a couple of quick recommendations, and then I know we want to get to the panel, some of our takeaways from this that we've talked to clients about. The first is this idea of private sector diplomacy. Okay, so this partnership between a company and all of its stakeholders, governments, NGOs, third parties, the media, sort of this sphere of communications that you need to engage in, there's now, like I said, this expectation. So you can either let that happen or you can be more deliberate about it. Just acknowledge that what your customers are saying is they want to see you doing it and they trust firms who are engaged in that actively. The second, which I think is increasingly important, is this idea of what we call mutual social responsibility. So you've heard about corporate social responsibility and a company doing good, but there's another behavior which seems to be sort of building momentum, and that is that customers, especially on the consumer side, but I think on the B2B side as well, they want to participate. They want to be there on the field with you participating and doing something good. They like companies that give them an opportunity to shape ideas. You know, look at Dell, look at Starbucks. Tell me how you think I should do business. We're gonna have a corporate social responsibility platform. Here's something you can do as well. Randy mentioned my blog, and I was at a conference recently where yet another executive got up to talk about sustainability, and it was all about, here's all the things that we're doing. And everybody went, yeah, I get it, you and everybody else. And it just seemed like there was a missed opportunity to say, here we are as a business community, there's 1,000 people in the room, here's what we're doing, and here's an opportunity for you to join our industry, us, here's some things that you can go out and do. I think the same holds true for business to business as well. Shared sacrifice, what does this really mean? I mean, part of it is executive compensation, but we believe it goes a lot deeper than that. It also has to do with just understanding the customer. So from a business to business perspective, it's going out and asking your customer what's affecting you today, or showing that you're listening, showing that you're making some business decisions that reflect a new economic reality and that you're doing something to help them. That's where the shared sacrifice comes in. You need to communicate to people that we're all in this together, we understand, and we're listening. And any action to the contrary, because of the blogosphere, gets called out in an instant. And then I know this is certainly no stranger to any of you, but the idea of a continuous conversation, that business is 24/7, whether you operate around the world or not, your company's always on. But it's not about a one-way conversation. Remember what the product and advertising stat showed. It's a conversation, it's being involved in engagement with people who are your peers, are your customers' peers, and so forth. So you need to be out there informing the conversation. And I will tell you, the hardest thing that we do at our firm is try to convince clients that they need to give up a little bit of control. Because everybody wants, they love the website because they control it. They love the advertising because they control it. You should do those things, but you have to allow some conversation to take place as well. So a few takeaways before we turn it over to the panel. You know, take a look at, when you consider trust and the data, and I know all of you have a brochure that you can read a little bit more about. Consider it as an enabler to the business. Okay, so it's not just an atmosphere or an environment of trust, but people take action. Your business, your customers take action on it. See it as being a door opener, because there really is some evidence for that. Recognize the license to operate. What behaviors should you change in your company that puts you in a better position to be less regulated by your industry, your customers, or the government? The idea of always on, we've talked about partnering being important. And then the last part, if I had to leave you with one message, is that trust isn't a campaign. Okay, so I know as B2B marketers, we're looking at, okay, what's our next campaign that we're going to launch this season to get people on board so we can sell to them? It's not a campaign. It's a series of expectations that you're setting and expectations that you're meeting over and over and over again. And it's a lot of business decisions that go into that, not just communications. So I hope that that was insightful.
If we can have the panel come back up, we're going to talk a little bit, which is always the
nice job.
Really good part of the
job. Thank you.
I think what I'd like to do now is just ask each of the panelists to take a minute or two and just give us your thoughts, comments on the study. I'd like to start with Rita. Go ahead, Rita.
Thank you. And this is always so interesting, and I want to thank Mark and thank Edelman. Their work really helps inform us as we kind of move forward. Three quick things. First of all, I'm really glad I'm an NGO after looking at all of that. But saying that, our organization, World Business Chicago, was created by the mayor about 10 years ago. And the whole idea was that there needed to be an outside organization that was being the linkage between business and government. And so I think the whole idea of partnerships, I would probably say it's almost a check and balance theory that's, you know, similar to what's kind of embedded in all of us from the very beginning with our Constitution. I think to gain trust, and it shows in this, is that you really need business, government, non-for-profits working together. And I think people would perceive that more as a check on each other and hopefully restore the trust in that. The second thing for us, I thought that I would take away from is the continuous coverage. Part of what we do is bring business to Chicago, and we have to convince people, and it's become increasingly hard, that we should be putting resources in that, and that is an extremely good thing. In some cases, we provide incentives to business to locate here, and I think from this, it really brings home to me that we have to keep reminding people that it is those businesses that provide jobs in Chicago. It is those businesses that provide the funding for infrastructure in the city and really make people understand the other side of that equation. And then the third thing is our messaging. I've really noticed in the last year, whenever we have a new company or corporation that's going to locate in Chicago and they're going to do their ribbon cutting, they now always ask, as we talk about that, what can they do for the community? What additional announcement can they make as part of that ribbon cutting? And a lot of it has been social consciousness, has been green. I really took away from what Mark was saying that we need to help expand that message into how do they involve the customer and how do they tell people what they can do also. So this has been really helpful, and I had three takeaways right away. So look forward to the rest of the conversation.
Okay, why don't we jump to Clark then? We'll save Ellis for last.
You sure?
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to take my stature in the survey with a grain of salt, that my ranking, my personal ranking, has gone up 10%, because I believe universities are going to be the next target of institutional distrust. In fact, I'd like to have the Edelman organization add universities, partly because of our outlandish tuition increases and a variety of other issues. So none of us are can avoid, I think, the glare and the anger of public. And if you think about this room here of 50 people, just, you know, look around and think about how many of you would have, if this was a representative sample, would have, despite Mark's comments, I think at least little or not enough trust in CEOs to either say nothing or give them virtually no credit. So it's a tough study. I kept trying to figure out whether we could turn the chart sideways or upside down to find more positive news in it.
Sorry.
But Mark is a bearer of bad news. He's a good guy. One message I'd like to explore with you is kind of an Obama message. And I spent last year working, if any of you were up at 6 a.m. in the morning, I did a lot of commentary for ABC locally on the election. And my 3.5 minutes of fame about 20 times last year. And I consider all of you public figures, and I think you should consider yourselves as if you were public figures running for office. And I know that seems offensive at a certain level, but consider this, you won't have to spend either $250,000 to buy a Senate seat or $10 million to actually run for one. That you are in the public limelight, and whether you represent a publicly traded company or not, and if you do, you're particularly a public figure. I mean that in a legal and in a public relations context, honestly, in the context of all of this, I think increasingly we are all public figures. And even if you're not a publicly traded company, you deal with them and your responsibility as a manager to break or help their reputation, their trust is imperative. So think of yourself and all you do as part of your public vision, your public image. I tell that to my students like Eric Johns, Eric Salo. He's available in December. He's one of my best students, editor of the Pulp Journal. And my son, Graham Salo, I'm doing a little advertising here. He's available in May for a job. All right. And they're both clean. They kept their noses clean because they don't have a problem with, I don't think they will have a problem with trust. Very quickly, one of the things I see in this is something that Mark, I think, emphasizes very nicely, and I'd like to talk to you about that as well. The odd bedfellows that this is going to create, that we're going to be in bed, pardon the reference here this early in the morning, but with the NGOs, it's an old political phrase, I hope you understand, and that we are going to be forming some odd alliances. And I think, as somebody who's worked in politics and business, that that's fantastic. I think we'll learn from each other dramatically, and I'm hoping you'll find people in your company who have that capacity to work between organizations really well. So let's go back to some of the details of it, but this is a major, major study. Mark is too modest. The Edelman Company has done a tremendous service to academics, to businesses. This is a, over time, very seldom do organizations conduct this kind of research on an annual basis, and so the internal and external validity of this is without a doubt worth careful reading and understanding, and worth a presentation by you or with the help of Mark in your organizations to get this message across.
Ellis?
Wow. I don't, not quite sure how to react. First off, it seems, with all due respect, the world that Clark's envisioning is one in which what happens in Vegas doesn't stay in Vegas, and who wants to live in a world like that? So, this notion that we're always in the public sphere, that there's no private anymore, is clearly a direction that people have been talking about forever since the internet and the transparency of online systems and the ease with which people can take a cell phone picture in one part of the world and send it around. But I don't think we're quite there yet. And I want to get back to what jumped out at me from the survey. Three things. One, it clearly underscores a lot of research that I've heard before regarding how consumers are attending to different forms of media, what they trust, and so forth. And this peer-to-peer thing, it's the old waiter's saying that if they like your restaurant, they'll tell two friends. If they don't like it, they'll tell 15. So that's not all that surprising. What did jump out at me a bit was particularly the research regarding media companies is the downstream implications for what this means both for corporate marketers and for traditional media outfits. If people are increasingly seeming to embrace non-traditional. And this is an odd sort of finding. We'll publish a web story on our website, and a thread of comments will happen. People start referring to the comments, not the original story. In other words, BAB 605 starts getting regarded with more legitimacy than the byline reporter at the top, whose coverage started this whole fire. So I'd like to get thoughts on that. And finally, some actionable items. If we take this survey's research as gospel, and to Clark's point, I think we should, because they've been doing it for 10 years and they've got a lot of interesting trend lines there. What does this tell marketers and also media types to do to magnify trust, to protect trust, and to move forward? So that's what came out for me.
Very good. I want to open it up to questions from the audience, but I wanted to also tell you we did a little mini survey, if you will, in our email. There's a little link, if you saw it, you could go to it and you could answer some questions from a B2B perspective on trust after looking at this data. And one of the things that came out, now I don't know, this kind of floored me a little bit, but and then we asked a question in the matter of trust: is it more important to B2B companies versus B2C companies? And 67% said trust is equally as important to both, and 22% said trust is more important to B2B companies. I thought it would have been higher for B2B companies simply because if you look at the selling paradigm, there are different impulse buy versus long-term relationship. So just a little bit of data. I have a couple more of those things I can throw out, but just something to kind of fuel the discussion. Any questions, Michael?
Randy, this one's for Rhea. I guess the question is, if I'm a company trying to build trust by doing public service, What are good examples of that, and what are not so good examples? I'm thinking about KFC and potholes. I don't want to put you on the spot, Rhea, about whether it's good or bad, but I mean, what are good examples of, if I'm a company and I want to build trust by serving Chicago, what should I be doing?
I think anything that involves students and schools tends to resonate with people, and you'll see a lot of the technology companies, as you know, Michael, who have worked with schools on math and science. And in a lot of cases, I think people think it's even more trustworthy if, in addition to being socially conscious, it does benefit the company. So if you have a technology company who's getting involved in math and science in schools because they're saying that's their future workforce, I think that has a lot more credibility than just picking something that isn't related to the business. And so we have a number of examples of those, as you know, with Microsoft and Google.
And to Rita's point, Clark brought a student, I brought a student too. So we'll both give him a Dell student covering this.
Any other questions?
Let me just...
Go ahead.
One of the issues here is there's another piece of research that's called the Authentic Organization that's done by the Arthur AWPageSociety.com. And I would reinforce in this city that schools are utmost importance and we've got nothing but uphill work to do. But if it's not authentic to you, don't do it. I mean, it may be that being green is authentic. I know these things come in and out like styles, but I can't imagine green is going to be out of style for a while. I hope not. We'll all be breathing the air that we drove in on Lower Wacker Drive this morning. So I would not just match it up against the NGO of the day. I would look for something that is authentic to you, that fits your goals and your employees, particularly often, expectations of what this company is about.
I'll just make a point about transparency, authenticity, legitimacy, and so forth. And this goes back to the early days of blogging, where I wrote a column and I said, if your CEO, having read something in Newsweek or picked the hat, and decides immediately, I gotta have a blog, really try and talk them out of it, because he's got a new shiny toy he'll play with for exactly a month, and then he'll move on to something else, say a yacht or something. And so, and then what will you do? You'll give it over to Angie in public relations, and Angie will write it under his byline. This will get out to Clark's nothing is private anymore, and the blogosphere will burn you up for having a faux blog. And I made this argument additionally saying, you know, it's a good idea to listen to what's being said about your company, even if you don't have one of these newfangled blogs. And I got torn apart in the blogosphere for not getting it and for being sort of retro and old thing, right? But I stand by that. And so the appearance of authenticity, the appearance of trustworthiness is not the goal. I mean, if your company isn't actually either of those things, you should just sit on your hands.
The institution of the media in the United States is so unique. How is the institution, the media, going to restore?
Well, here's I just pulled this out, the current issue of B2B. I hope we have some readers here. I'm sorry, I didn't pull it out, the current issue of B2B, I had a nerve point. The LA Times last month put a full page ad for an ABC television series looking much like the LA Times front page on their front page, right? And these things have been done forever, but it caused a firestorm within the newsroom, and who knows what the readers are thinking, but my biggest worry is that media companies who are in just dire straits all over the place are going to start making these choices, if you will, to sell positions or to sell products that will have long-term downstream negative implications on their brands.
Yes.
You know, this is media related as well. You know, I work for Business Week, so I was of course very happy to see business magazines as kind of high on the list of trust, and I think that stems from the fact that it's credible. And so there's all this other content out there, to your point earlier, the comments about the actual articles themselves stir up a conversation, but they don't offer the same degree of credibility that a well-researched...
Well, I don't know if you can say that. I mean, what we know is that we're seeing a lot of energy and activity around those comments, traffic, the pickups. In other words, those comments are driving people to the website maybe in a bigger way, a magnified way than the original article. So I'm not sure that you can really make that argument. I'll also say that the media companies who are facing hard times they sort of understood the demographic of the people who habitually read the Newsweekly or the Daily Paper or something. What I don't think they understand at all are the consumption habits of not even people of 25, but people of 17, 19 years old. They're profoundly different. So, I worry long term about that as well, just to respond to your point.
Don't they not understand though what people want to read? I mean, it seems to me
to read how they read it and where they get it and their, if you will, the their habits around media consumption, not the individual stories, not the way they're written, not the topics as much as the packaging and delivery and syndication.
I'm going to reinforce that question. I mean, I work at the Medill School of Journalism, and we have no clue. We have no clue, and there's not enough research that has been done to look at this. We are covering our bases by having students cross-trained in 7 or 8 different media channels, but that's not the answer either, because in 3 years those will be gone, and there'll be 7 or 8 new ones. So, you know, the reality is, the media in this country are almost a lost cause at a very high level. If you look at China, where I spend somewhere between 20 and 30 days a year, the relationship is radically different. It's not what you might admire. They don't have a First Amendment. The government doesn't seem to feel they need one. It doesn't matter. The reality is that they are moving forward with a very vital media, print, broadcast, blog. I'm not saying it's the same as we have here, but the public relations relationship with the media is very strong in China and will get stronger and stronger and stronger. So we have perhaps the biggest lost cause in that. We spend the whole day talking about the media dilemma, And that's what feeds part of this, I think. So it's
there's one more. There's one more thing that I wish the next year maybe you guys can add, and that is companies that you mentioned the credibility of a traditional source. Well, everybody remembers the guy who had Heard on the Street column. Remember that?
Yeah.
Was it 20 years ago that happened, something like that? It was a guy who was writing about all this stuff, and it turns out that his boyfriend was feeding him stock tips, and the guy was buying stock. It was a terrible scandal, and clearly the Wall Street Journal did not go out of business. They're still gonna. I would be curious to see how long it takes organizations, or for that matter, media companies, to rebound from a betrayal of trust. That would be a very interesting question. And what does it take tactically to do that?
Sir,
thank you. I noticed one slide in your presentation that caught my interest. It showed trust by age of the respondent, and it showed across the board greater levels of trust from younger people in all the sources and institutions.
Yeah.
Any comment on that?
Yeah, and that's, I'm just going to stand so I don't try to get over to the mic. That's consistent with last year. Mm-hmm. So younger demographics tend to trust all sources in general more than an older demographic. So is that they haven't had enough experience with a bad exposure. I'm not sure. There's that, but you know what I took. What I think is really interesting is that last year we looked at that particular demographic and sources of information they trusted most, and the most trusted source of information was Wikipedia, which you know. So a community-based model.
Inaccurate or not, Encarta is out of business.
Right.
So.
It's down.
Yeah.
Well, what's interesting of all that is it is what it is. So mm-hmm. as marketers and communicators, we have to deal with it, right?
Mm-hmm. But they even had more trust in the established sources, didn't they?
Well, I think that there's just from some other data, generational data that we did, there's also the comfort with it, this sort of comfort with a torrent of
my son in a New York trip with his girlfriend trusted a guy they met on the street to walk into a sub basement in Soho to buy a handbag for her, right? At night.
Yeah.
And I hearing the story hearing the story after the fact, I was just bowled over. How could you trust a complete stranger taking you to a sub basement with your girlfriend? I mean, you were putting her in jeopardy as well.
We'll go with you, and then we'll go
I didn't go alone, yeah.
Next question.
I think it would be interesting to also include as a category people with very strong personal brands. I'm speculating that whereas trust in just about everything else is going down, trust in certain very credible individuals is rising. Oprah Winfrey comes to mind. Others who just have a following and seem to tell no wrong.
There's some additional work that was done at the beginning of this century by the Rockefeller Foundation with the Public Relations Society of America, and they do one of those rankings of who's the most credible to you, and it has that list of 1 to 50, and unfortunately, politicians, and particularly the President of the United States, who it was a combination of Bush and Clinton at that time, were near the bottom, and my good friends in the sales and management organization were near the bottom. And this, at that time, before Florida, the Supreme Court justices were at the top. Now, I don't know what happened after Florida. But very interesting, when you go to these individual levels of who do you in a way trust, or who has credibility to you, it gets down to a micro level. So small businessmen and women in the community were more trusted than the CEO of the corporation. You were better off having you in Chicago represent your company than having your CEO come in and do a big blow up. Because teachers, and I mean by that real teachers, not university professors, were even more trusted.
Question over here, I think.
My question was, has anybody heard of any other sources going after individual institutions, brands, NGOs, and the like to measure their credibility over time?
I remember a couple years ago, didn't we, in the study, look at brands, and Microsoft was the number one trusted brand in the world. This was a couple, 3 years ago.
Yeah, we've looked at individual corporate brands.
Yeah.
Every year we take a look at some, but we haven't looked at to your point about the personal brands. We haven't looked at that though.
Yeah. Well, what about NGO brands? Have you looked at that?
Yeah, there have been a few. So what we try to do is every year, I want to say that this year we looked at 25 individual companies, and usually there's a few NGOs in there, global ones, because obviously we have to do it across, you know, 20 countries, but Sierra Club, World Wildlife, and so forth. And they tend to do really, really well across the board.
And Mark, have any of those gone through a period of media attention when otherwise had a disaster and you've had a chance to see recovery period?
Yeah, I'm gonna sort of split that in half. We looked at how the Red Cross did in the wake of Katrina, which was really interesting what their response was like. But what we haven't looked at is how long. I really like that, really like the question that I'm gonna raise with the folks for next year, because I think it would be, it'd be insightful for people to know, you know, even if I handle it the right way, how long is it going to take to bounce?
I have one thesis here, which I'm just going to throw out to the room, and that is, maybe I've telegraphed it already, that trust is somehow relational, proportional to transparency, authenticity, and that if the messaging or the individual seems too scripted, too perfect, too on point, that trust is going to slowly diminish, because we just have a sense that person isn't really telling us everything. And that this is what's fascinating from the social media standpoint, that you're seeing a more of a 360 view of individuals. I mean, there's a guy who, I like his posts, I hate his politics, you know, but because he allowed me to see both, right? I'm more inclined to like him. If he had kept that, hard right of center aspect of himself in the back end, because he knew it might diminish his traffic, and then I found out about it, I would feel duped. But he kind of laid it all out there and got it out of the way, and we can move forward.
Let me give a quick endorsement on just back to NGOs for a second. Take a look on the web at the Edelman work over years on NGOs. They, Richard and Dan and Mark, were way ahead of the curve on watching NGOs as a developing phenomenon in this country. And I think from my experience with business people, we don't take them seriously enough. I mean, we think of them as people chain themselves to trees and fences and so forth. And they're an extraordinary body of supporting people in this country, and increasingly of interest to my students, frankly. The second part of it is that if you want to look at where they rank sometimes on trust, there's a crisis literature up there, which also is a handy tool for understanding whether people lose trust or gained it. And United Way went through that with some management problems where they were using the limousine a few too many times at the top level. Red Cross went through some management issues as well. The Boy Scouts have gone through this problem for many years with their policies with respect to gays. And so you can go down the line and there'll be any number of traditional NGOs. I don't think the literature is very well known on non-traditional NGOs that are emerging more and more every day in this country.
A related point, which is I even think the way that companies are talking about their CSR or their sustainability is going to change too.
Yeah.
Because I look at the journalistic world and, you know, Ellis, your publication, others, you want to talk to a company, sure, you're going to know you're going to talk to the executives, but you want to talk to the customers. You know, give me some customers I can talk about, or I'll go online and find them myself, because you want to create that story. And I believe from a sustainability standpoint, from an NGO standpoint, that's going to be more important. I read your sustainability report, but what I'd really like to do is I'd like to hear from the companies who are your business partners.
Right.
You know, to the point about, even if you're not a publicly held company,
absolutely,
your point,
absolutely,
you deal with them. So where are you in the supply chain?
Right.
And how are you contributing to that in a positive or a negative way? And I believe that people are going to go online, and they're either going to, I think this is the important point, people are either going to get it from you or get access to it from you, or they're going to find it on their own. You know, it's kind of like our company doesn't, we don't want any bloggers, we don't want anybody on Facebook. Well, I'm sorry. They're on Facebook, they have their own blog, you just might not know about it. So how do you want to be a part of that conversation, monitor it, contribute to it, or not? It's a decision you have to make.
How many Twitter users do we have in the room?
It's
That's good. Second quarter, right? Do you brand yourself as your company's identity, or is this an individual thing? Show of hands for the company, sort of Twitter company one. All right, I got both. So I've got two accounts.
Wow.
Right? Now, I would rather not, because maintaining the two personas,
dual personality,
Twain had a great saying. He said, always tell the truth, I'm paraphrasing, always tell the truth, you'll have less to remember.
Yeah, right.
So I'm trying to keep these two identities together, but when I set up the corporate one, I connected to somebody, just because I was playing with the platform, whom someone else I work with, a peer actually, who doesn't Twitter, heard about it from somebody who does, which is, indicative right there, called me up, oh my God, do you know who you're connected to? Get that person off there, stop following that person. That's inappropriate. Right? So, for sorting these things out, and I ask all of our Medill students to help me with this, what students are doing vis-a-vis their online identities, because I think it's going to change the way corporations look and the way people transact and all that. For the time being, you can get around it by having two identities out there, but ultimately that's not sustainable, particularly if you get outed on the one to the other.
We're actually running over here a little bit. We have a couple more minutes, or you want to wrap it up? I just would like the panel to say, just real quickly, any last comments on trust, and then we'll call it quits here.
I'll be tweeting about it at IMC Prof later today.
Good. Rita?
This was a really interesting discussion, and I think it influences everything we do, and so I came away with some really good takeaways.
The mini survey that Randy conducted, I hadn't heard the stat, but I would have had the same assessment that B2B and B2C would have been quite different.
I was surprised. Well, listen, I want to thank everybody for attending today. Thank you, panel.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. And by the way, if you want to receive the deck, if you could just leave your card out here, we'll make sure we get it to you.
I hope you enjoyed a journal that my student passed out. If you have any interest in on a mailing list, you can grab a card up here, and we'll be happy to send the expedition to you.
Speaking of sustainability, like this pen, it's made out of
recycled
cardboard, and it pops up your stick, and they have like slashes cut in the plastic so it doesn't use as much.
It's all about green. Cool. That's got a paper wrap on it. I'm impressed. I wanted to be different. Say hello to some people. But then I'll see if
my PC consistently goes to rapidity speed is very good. So I was on the subject. And the panel agreed. People are more angry if they have to wait 2 weeks to get the answer. And if they get an answer immediately, it's just, I don't know if that's how much. So,
So
this notion that people...
Yeah, I'm in the IMC. It's
just old.
We're a little lost in the bill, but we're still there I got marketing business for 15 years too, but I sold out more than journalism.
He's never tried to be a board or anything else. He is exactly what he seems to be.
Right. Well, I didn't even root my own school, but we have my own school. Seven days in
is going to be a scandal in his class. And when that happens, and you see him
in the sheet, you know that
either making a person stumble or
get around a little bit, but
that will ruin it because you see him
here's
don't worry about that.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, of course.
I've never seen.
Oh, yeah.
He's a good guy. He's a good guy. He's not actually a perfect guy.
He's out of the Presbyterian.
And so when people talk like that, it's like,
well, you know,
I can tell because it sets up an expectation.
Good morning. Hi, Rita. Tom Tarr. I do the write-ups for the events for the VMA. I'm a freelance writer and marketer. And I wanted to give you my card also because, you know, I've heard about World Business. I worked in economic development for a community in Indiana and actually retargeted the Chicago market at one point in time. So, it's kind of under my fingernails, economic development. So I want to look more about World Business. It's been a long time since I was. Yeah, I would love to just network and yeah, absolutely.
Great.
I mean, because it's, you know, knowing it from that side as well as from the company side, having been in the site selection process here in Chicago with a company, you kind of have a different view of it than most people.
Oh, I would love to get your that would be great. Oh, please.
All right,
sure.
Great. I look forward to it. Do you have a card on you?
And you're going to ask that, and hopefully I do.
Sorry, to okay. I thought one person on me.
Sure.
I actually do.
All right, great. Yeah, it was nice meeting you. I enjoyed your thoughts. Yeah. All right.
Great. Hi.
Just wanted to talk to you as well, and you sit down someday and get to know each other. I do a lot of stuff in the entrepreneurship community.
Oh, all right.
And on the other side, I used to have a corporate life. I'm one of those people that's a thought leader in how to use search and search engine marketing and things like that.
Okay.
And it's something that a lot of businesses still struggle to do effectively, and looking for the ones that potentially either as an employee or as a consultant do that. And I think at the time that people are making big changes, like you mentioned, there's sometimes work with companies are relocating, that's the time to have that kind of conversation because they're in that mode of being open to change, where that's the number one thing I look for, whether it's executive changes, ownership changes, I look for those triggers that show up.
I didn't want to hit you with KFC. I just wanted to.
Oh, sure, my
God. I actually don't know the answer to that one. So. Right. No, that was.
My best technologies. You bet, of course. Should I give it to you the Chinese way? No, you have to take it. And you have to look at it. That's just stuff from my pocket.
Well, that was actually, I wrote it down. There's actually a book out called Authenticity, which is, I wrote it down. I want to read that book because I think that was very interesting as a response. You have to do things with government that are authentic, win-win.
You're in the executive program?
Hey, I'm having drinks tonight with Tom Marsky. Who's doing the Chicago Innovation Awards. I understand Dan's getting more involved, which is very good. Well, I know you're buddies with who is it that you've known for years? From used to be at MacArthur, now works with guy, I can't believe
Ray Boyer.
Ray Boyer, yes.
And then we always have
an eye
there.
That's right. Yes. That's such a
power. It's
really good.
Well,
you were both great.
I'm hungry for something.
All right, good to see you. Do you know Bill Park from the Exchange? Hey, Bill. You know Rita? Bill used to be at Motorola, and now he drives communications.
I'm great for Obama. She represents Rita,
Bill Park.
Yeah, mentor.
Yeah.
I think CME is involved somehow.
Yeah, I think he's involved.
We got a kid at it, but I should get my own layout.
So what is Rural Business Charter?
You're a public-private partnership between the city and our private sector board. Our board is CEOs of Boeing, Motorola, United Airlines, and we help bring in the team business. So we really navigate the city departments, the state. We bring everyone to the table at once, which the businesses are really impressed with. They don't have to go from state offices to city offices. And then our corporate board gets really involved. Like Miller Coors, we just attracted our corporate board is very involved in reaching out to their CEO,
Are they coming to Chicago?
Oh, yeah. From Denver and Milwaukee, they joined together into a new corporation. It was a location, so.
They were a client of mine.
Oh, really?
Miller was, yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, they're going to be in Chicago. So we're really looking forward to meeting them. But that's a reason to say
we do have a lot of people.
It's fun. It's great. And it's a great city, so yes. You've got a bit of product to sell. Very nice to meet you.
My whole career has been really different, from any of my peers. I've really started out with being a speaker.